The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. It's Gil Alexander and Kelly Bidlin at the South Point Hotel Casino. The beauty of having the show here at the South Point, Kelly, as you know, is people roll on in while we're doing shows, and it's just been so many memories of that through the years. Todd Wishnev, by the way, yesterday, remember Bet Bash Week, we had everybody rolling in every day, and now one of our favorites comes in once again, which feels like an annual appearance. His name is Joe Pita. You may know him from his work at ESPN Chalk, perhaps back in the day, or as the author of Trading Bases, where he described his foray back into baseball, regaining his love of the sport of baseball, talking about his modeling of the sport when he bet it back in 2012, called Trading Bases. And then a few years later, 2019 Masters Preview, where he talked about what had, you know, before that been proprietary data at Augusta, which he revealed in that book. And now his third book is upon us. It's called Moneyball for the Money Set. I'll hold it up, but we could show the graphic to make it clearer for everybody watching. Moneyball for the Money Set, using sports analytics to predict the returns of portfolio managers with startling accuracy. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Joe Pita. How you doing, man? You good?
Oh, I'm sorry, Gil. Are we on the air?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going through some 1970s baseball cards here to see if maybe Toby Hara or Richie Zisk played for the Angels after leaving Texas.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'll put my grid down and go to the show.
You came with a bit. I love it.
Always like surprising you, right, Gil, with
forget
the
your book. Let's talk about that for a second. Are you as obsessed with this?
Yeah, I think I told you in a text that I believe it is putting off early onset Alzheimer's for me.
Yes.
Because it is a great mental exercise, and it's fun. It is. I'll give you my quick, my favorite moment was, for more than four decades, Gil, I have known who Lou Brock was traded for from Chicago to the Cardinals. And that is a piece of worthless information that, like I say, I've been carrying around for four decades. And then earlier this month, there's a Cardinals Cubs square, and I didn't even have to think twice to type Ernie Broglio in there. And I thought
to
myself,
awesome.
That's the long game, Gil. That's playing the long game. I carried that for four decades,
Broglio.
And it, boom, I got like a 0.2% answer there.
The way I say it is, I'm like, you know, you get married, you get divorced, you have kids, you have deaths in the family, but somehow I knew that Pat Kelly played for both the White Sox and the Orioles. Like, I don't, how does that stay in our brains? But it's so great.
It really is. And like I say, I like going through the hard drive and trying to recall some of that stuff. And you're right. There are times when two squares come up and I instantly know, you know, the Brewers Yankees came up and I'm like, oh, Jim Boughton played for the Pilots when he wrote, ball four
for the Pilots.
And, you know, I'm putting that in right. And the Pilots were the precursor of the Brewers. And yeah, that it is funny how that just instantly can come to you, but you're right. If the Diamondbacks or the Marlins are
I'm
on there,
done.
I have no chance.
I'm done.
I'm not Paul Spohr. Like, I
That's
know
right.
he's awesome. Like, he knows relievers for the last 20 years. I have no chance.
Will Hill shames me every day with like his 57s. I'm like, oh, stop it with your 2000s baseball knowledge, you bastard. That's the immaculate grid we're obsessed with. Back to Joe's book, though. Moneyball for the Money Set. Okay, I have so many questions. First of all, let me just say this. I read this cover to cover on the flight to Korea, 13 hours that way. The girlfriend was like, why aren't you present? I was like, blame Joe Pita. I'm reading this book. It was great. My first question is, and again, it's using sports analytics to predict the returns of portfolio managers with startling accuracy, which is the world you come from. My first question is, how did you not think of this sooner, and how has no one else written this?
Yeah, those are good questions. Good questions, Gil. Let me tell you sort of the origin. Of course, I wrote Trading Bases because I talked about the sports betting, asset management, and moneyballization, right, of, you know, the critical reasoning overlap of all three of those. And we've talked about this. I do hope if I ever meet a timely demise, you or you will have an intern go through all the appearances I did.
Oh, yeah.
And have a little best of.
Oh, we will.
And one of those was the Billy Beane podcast. where I think we were doing the 2015 or 16 season preview, and I disclosed that I had had a long, casual one-on-one lunch with Billy Beane. Because he had read Trading Bases, his mom bought it for him. He called a mutual acquaintance and said, you know, I'd love to meet Joe. And during that meeting, he said something, and he's a very curious guy. He wants to know all about, you know, what our jobs were, you know, what was going on in my industry. And he said, when I, you know, we talked about, hey, you know, we're just trying to find undervalued assets. And he said, that's all we were ever trying to do. And it became a book because Michael Lewis instantly grasped that, having also come from the industry. And my thought was, yeah, that's great, but why isn't my industry now using the data techniques that you guys have mastered in our industry? Because we have the same thing, highly compensated performers who, you know, awash in data. And then I spent the last 10 years just diving into that. And
that's really what you've been doing vocationally.
Right. For the last 10 years, including working for Steve Cohen on his hedge fund side at the time he bought the New York Mets. And all the findings and all the work is in the book. And it's very fun for someone who's a data analytics fan, a sports analytics fan, to read. But that's how it came about. And now, Gil, I feel like I've, you know, uncovered something big. And that, you know, go ahead, refute this. Let somebody refute this, because there are some big findings in here.
And you reveal it all, and you use, for those of us who are sports fans, it's where you have a lot of, you know, baseball acronyms in there for some of the things that you're doing. So you borrowed from that world in your life, that side of your brain, to do this. But you reveal everything. And so it really does. The biggest thing that I came away with from it was, you know, we say this about when some people talk about their handicapping techniques, right? Or if Crack and I are talking about little things, we will often get people, why are you giving that away on air? My thing with your book was, wow, Joe, did you really want to reveal all of this? That was my biggest thing was, why did you ultimately, I get why you decided to write it, but then was there ever a point while you were writing it where you were like, should I give away the farm here?
Well, the markets are, you know, things are a little different in that it's not quite as crowded. For instance, creating war, you might give away that and not worry about, you know, a little different than finding an edge in a game, you know, like Bill or, you know, has. So, but still, yes, you know, look, why did I write it? If I were on CNBC, I'd give you the sort of generic answer that was like, hey, I think some of this is teachable. I like telling stories, and all that's true. But I'll keep it 100 here.
There we go.
Imagine there's a gentleman who dives deep into an industry. He studies it, and he masters the data. And in mastering that data, he uncovers some relationships among that data and realizes that, hey, I can help any entity in this industry do better. So he goes around to the entities and he unveils his findings, and he is either politely dismissed or even ridiculed.
Even ridiculed, right.
This is Bill James in the 1970s and 80s, and I guess even the 90s, right? Now imagine that the people who are the incurious, incompetent, negligent GMs who are dismissing Bill James, imagine that instead of having, you know, imagine that they have a fiduciary duty to the stakeholders of their entity, right? And imagine further that in being negligent, they're not costing the stakeholders a civic pride or a shiny trophy or a champagne-soaked locker room for the employees. But imagine they're costing the stakeholders tens to maybe hundreds of millions of dollars annually. Well, that's kind of the way I feel with some of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I did try going around to some big entities, and I'm like, I felt the same frustration. And unlike Bill James, I'm not an outsider, right? I can't credibly call myself an outsider. So my writing won't be as caustic as like early Bill James. I hopefully it's, you know, with the exception of one entity that I call out in the book because it was personal. and it may ban me from future alumni events. It's hopefully just a very conversational book, but that's really why my frustration level at the end of my 30-year career is hitting a peak.
It taps into, I always say about weathermen, I sort of throw it around where I'm like, how come weathermen never get graded on what they forecast on a daily basis, right? Like, if only we held in fire. This taps into something where we're always like, yeah, how is my portfolio manager doing? Like, how do I know who's good and who's not?
Yeah, Gil, that's what this is. And these are new techniques. I think I proved them because I had a canvas at some of the places I worked to prove them. But that's exactly right. And I see we have like 90 seconds. After the break, ask me how this applies to like Sloan.
Oh, I will.
The Sloan Sports Conference. Yep. And because that's exactly right. I do make one example in the book that even there's a difference between knowing how good your performers are. I make an analogy between the performer and the portfolio. And I mentioned that even baseball announcers mess this up. Like, if you ask John Smoltz, somebody will turn to him, the play-by-play will turn to him before the game and say, John, tell us about today's pitcher. And he'll say something like, well, he uses fastball, curve, sinker, his changeup is an out pitch, et cetera. You're not describing the pitcher there. You just described his portfolio. Whereas generally we know how to describe his skills, the pitcher.
Yes.
Well, he has a spin rate that's elite among on his fastball.
Right.
There's movement, 3 inches of movement. And I make that analogy between, in our world too, where don't tell me about his holdings. Tell me about the portfolio, the manager. What is he good at? And that's what the book is about.
Going to have a couple more questions about Moneyball for the Money Said Joe's new book, but also he's obsessed with Survivor. We'll ask what he's doing with that this year. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on the numbers game live from the South Point, Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, Joe Pita in the house for one more segment. The author of his latest book, Moneyball for the Money Set, using sports analytics to predict the returns of portfolio managers with startling accuracy. That's a title that'll get your attention. You wanted to bring up, before we get to your thoughts on Survivor, how does this relate to the old MIT Sloan Sports Conference?
Yeah, and it relates to your audience, right? An audience of model builders and sports bettors and daily fantasy players too. So you've seen the Sloan Sports Conference evolve as much as anyone, right? You were an early attendee, earlier than I ever went.
Yep.
You may have been there, like, was it in conference rooms on campus at that point, or was it just starting to get bigger
at that point?
Right, and now, of course,
still small, though.
Now, of course, it's in convention centers. And what it really is now is, in some ways, what used to just be an exchange of ideas among people with, data people, has turned almost into a job fair, right? It's represents every major sports league is present in some manner. Some teams send people, and people are walking around with resumes, and it's almost a job fair. And I know that is something that Jessica Gelman and Daryl Morey, who founded Sloan Graduates, who founded the sports conference, are very proud of, and obviously they should be. And my question for them should be, after having been there a lot, is, so you've got all these sports leagues that are there interviewing. Why isn't the MIT management company there? Now, the MIT management company, or Matimco is what they're called, they oversee the endowment, the multi-billion-dollar endowment for MIT. And their mission, of course, is to, promote the education for the next generation of people and fund some of the university's expenses, et cetera. But their real job every day,
raising money.
Well, it's managing money.
What
they're really doing, Gil, is they are looking for, in a vast field of performers, they are looking for the most highly skilled and therefore valuable performers. Now, does that sound like
something recruiting
in a data-rich environment?
Yeah.
Does that sound like anybody who might have those skills at the conference?
If only we knew where to find these people.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if Matimco and every other endowment has to realize, I shouldn't be hiring somebody who loves stocks. That's like saying you need a GM who used to be a player. Instead, You want somebody who has the skills to find somebody who you can identify as skilled. Anyway, the reason I wanted to get to that was, for this audience, I wrap up this whole book with the final chapter, and it centers around Rufus Peabody.
Yes.
The story on Rufus, and I didn't want to tell that here. That's why I kind of used the Sloan analogy. And you will see why I believe so strongly that there is a market in the world of asset management for the people who excel in things like daily fantasy sports and model-based sports betting. So, yeah, that's just...
Does Rufus know he's in the book?
I have told him. Now he is now aware.
Okay.
But, you know how I write. I'm not a reporter, right? I'm not an investigative reporter, right. So it's not an interview. It's more based on, you know...
I was super thrilled because I got a footnote in there because Rufus was on this show and he's going to this. I was like, hey, there I am. I was like, is Steve Martin in The Jerk? There I am. Okay. And then last thing, any thoughts about like a university course around this?
Yeah, boy, I would love this. There are some professors who got, like you, early copies of the book. And I think some of the thoughts are, there's a lot of sports analytics 101 courses out there across America now. I think this is, you know, the thought is this could be 201. This is, okay, now that you've mastered, data analytics in sports, how can that be applied to other industries?
Yeah.
So, yeah,
this
I would love
great,
to turn
man.
This into some sort of adjunct course.
Oz, I hope this is your legacy. Like, as great as the other books were, this one, Moneyball for the Money Set, using sports analytics to predict the returns of portfolio managers with startling accuracy, is just awesome. And it's out. Is it available now?
It is available, yes. In fact, as of today, the Kindle download is, it was pre-sale Kindle before today. The hardcover dropped a few days early this weekend, you know, thank you, Amazon. I don't know how they do that. But yes, it's on Amazon. It's
linked on your Twitter, Magic Rat SF.
Sure is. Yep.
Magic Rat SF for Joey. Tribute to Bruce Springsteen, his musical love. All right. Now to the real stuff here beyond your book, which is your obsession. You share an obsession with Survivor. I'm sure you're in town signing up for these. Yes.
Gil, I'm going to surprise you.
Oh, boy. You went full 10?
No, I am skipping this year.
What?
That I know, and I haven't told you.
Like breaking it to me gently. I haven't told you. I know.
What are we going to talk about this fall?
It's me. It's not you.
Yeah. I can tell you that over the last 2 years, I did have really good success the last 2 years. You were instrumental in getting me to move over to Survivor,
yeah.
and then I joined Millions too. And as you know, we talked extensively. I finished, I think it was top 25, 23rd through 28th, tied for 24th, I think, 2 years ago in Survivor. Last year, and I cashed quarterly in Millions. Last year, just missed a quarter cash in Q1 by a half point, and was 21st overall going into Q4, and then I went 2-3 the last 5 weeks, all 5 weeks, and finished 1 point out of the money. It might have even been a half point. Cost by that Texans Colts finished the 4th and 20.
Oh, that, couldn't forget.
Yeah, that kept me.
You know who it also cost? The Texans.
Yes, I know. Incredible, right? So you remember last summer I did so much work. I even came on this show and unveiled two unders on the Raiders and the Broncos. I had write-ups.
Nicely done, by the way.
And
you took a lot of incoming for those?
Yeah, because they were definitely out of consensus.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized this year as I started to, I was like, okay, I got to get going on this in June and July. And I just realized I had spent so much effort on the book. And hopefully I'm at the age where I now realize I'm lighting money on fire just to do this. And yes, I get enjoyment, but I'm not prepared this year.
Are you suggesting that it's unlikely that we'll win? Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, there's a difference between feeling like you're prepared and just knowing. Like, you know, this would be like entering a Premier League fantasy league against Paul Carr.
Okay.
Like, I'm lighting money.
I get it. You feel that way about Millions, but you feel that way about Survivor too?
I do, because the Survivor, I really, from the summer work, that sort of becomes my map for the first half of the season.
Yeah.
And I just very consistently follow that if I'm fading or backing. And then, of course, as the games go on, you have to adjust. But it just gives, and whether that's a folly or false confidence or not, it just gives me grounding and a roadmap.
Hmm.
As opposed to, like I say, just pure guessing. And I have, you know, I missed the COVID year, so I have missed other years of the contests here. I really just didn't feel like I was prepared, and I
okay.
did.
A year off, if you
will. It's going to be a year off, yes.
Okay. Let me just ask you this, then, our final minutes, because I have a rather unpopular take on it, I guess, which is, you know, there's a 10-entry max now for Survivor.
Up from six, right?
Up from six. Last year, I did five. And this year, I was thinking to myself, well, you know, because Crack Game, he's doing 30 or however many he does. Most people are going full 10. And I ended up with five again, not because I didn't think about getting 10, but I have this opinion. I was like, I say this all the time, so why would I get 10? I really believe what I say, which is, I believe that after a certain number of entries, that this is just dumb. That there is what the phrase is a redundancy, right? That it doesn't matter how the. Obviously, you're trying to get multiple entries as deep as possible. Let's use Thanksgiving for the circa purposes. You're trying to have multiple entries for Thanksgiving. But I believe that your ability to get multiple entries by Thanksgiving is not a function of the number you start with. It's a function of how you play the game. And so I don't think you need to go 10.
Yeah, I agree with you, Gil. I don't think you can credibly create 10 unique paths to Thanksgiving, say, which means then all you really are doing is just doubling up.
Yes.
Right? And it's, I think 3 to 4. I did 3 first year. I did 4 last year. And 3 of them disappeared quickly. It was actually kind of freeing to know I only had one left.
I agree with that,
too. To be honest, because, you know, I wasn't thinking, okay, how am I going to split these up? Am I trying to, serpentine different ways to the end?
I'm not sure Derek Stevens will like that I have that opinion, but that I really believe that. I think that you're, like you said, there's not 10 distinct paths. However you say it, there's not... You know, if you go 4-3-3, if you go all in, it doesn't matter. You're just expediting down to, and yes, will there be 3 or 4 people at the end that do have multiples by Thanksgiving? Yes, there will be, but it won't be because of how many they started with.
Yeah, and if, as I recall from the Thanksgiving that we deeply dove into 2 years ago, they all took Dallas over Las Vegas anyway.
Do you remember the thought exercise?
Yeah, the thought exercise
with Parlay, yeah.
The other thing I think, and when you say Crack has like 30, I think a lot of those then they become partnerships with other people.
Yes.
I am a horrible committee member.
I told him the
when
same.
When it comes to contests,
He's going to come on Thursday and lambaste me again for being that way.
I'm
the same way you are. Moneyball for the Money Set. Joe Pita's latest book, available at Amazon, or go to his Twitter at MagicRatSF for the link. Thank you, sir.
Great to be on, Gil.
Joe Pita, everybody. My Mishpucha, Chrissy Andrews, next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The updated NFL betting guide will be released on Thursday. Throughout the NFL preseason, the VSiN experts have been reevaluating every team to give you the betting edge. Our updated NFL betting guide will have picks from every on-air host. Kelly, I did mine yesterday, so it will be every on-air host. Team-specific preseason analysis, how to use VSiN betting splits, and football contest strategies. If you want the best and most comprehensive collection of picks, predictions, and previews, now's the time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber for as low as $19 or save 50% off the monthly price with an annual subscription and bet smarter all year long. Sign up today at vsin.com/subscribe. You know what I also like about people who roll through the studio? Wishnev yesterday, Pita today. Everybody dresses to come in studio. Have you noticed that?
That's right. Looking sharp.
Looking sharp. Wishnev says before he goes, I just want you to know I'm not going to be able to dress. When have you ever dressed up for this thing?
Yeah, when's that been a thing? Yeah. I mean, I missed that show.
Joe Pita wearing his VaTech. He went to VaTech. He's wearing his Virginia Tech t-shirt. Chrissy Andrews, my Mishpucha, comes dressed up in the couture that is Chrissy Andrews fashion.
Well, I went to South Point. That's why I suggested my South Point shirt.
That's very nice.
Well, thank you.
How many of these types of shirts do you think you own in your closet?
30, maybe.
That's it?
Maybe more.
I would have gone way
probably
over.
More.
I would have gone
probably
way
more.
Over.
I don't know.
How many does your wife think you have in there? 100?
No. Well, let's just say this. I've got the big closet. Most guys give it to their wives. I got the big closet.
South Point Hotel Casino, tip of the strip. Nice to see you, sir.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
How you doing? You good?
I'm doing good, yeah.
The football, the pro in college football handle, what you expect it to be at this time of year?
Saturday was fantastic.
Even week 0 was fantastic.
Yeah, week 0, with a terrible schedule. Jimmy posted that one ticket.
It was terrible, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy posted that one ticket. Guy bet us $40,000 on Notre Dame, you know, and Ryan came by, and he goes, oh, I guess we really need Navy. No, I said, we need Notre Dame. It just overpowered them.
Really?
So we had a lot of business.
So people overpowered that with Navy bets.
Yeah, I know.
And let me, this is case study number 5 bajillion as to why in-game betting is better than pre-flop. Those people had to know their bet was done within a quarter max.
I was in here on Saturday. Jimmy came in and saw the ticket. So it was, about a half point too, right?
The guy bought a half point.
And then it closed 20 and a half here anyways, right? Yeah. He bought 21 to 20 and a half, and then it closed 20 and a half anyways.
Can I tell you?
All right. Well, that's good. Week one, you would expect to be, based on the number of games, then that exponentially greater, of course.
Even Thursday. Got a couple good games Thursday. Minnesota, Nebraska, Utah, Florida, I think, is on Friday, Thursday. I can't remember all the days. I know we got a great, great weekend coming up. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Florida State LSU game. I think it's going to be a terrific game. I mean, that game could easily be in the college football playoffs.
Huge handle for that. Yeah. I always try to do this with you, and we've done it every year, and I'm sure we're not the only ones to do this. But I want to just for the people who are just landing on this show for the first time, give us a great comparison between, as much as we are sitting here talking about college football handle, when it steps up to the NFL, as great as college football is, you know, I don't know if it's a Monday night NFL, a good Monday night NFL game is equivalent to what in college football?
Well, let me put it this way. Until we get to the playoffs, for the weekends, you know, in the entire schedule, the college handle is just about the same as the NFL.
Well, there's so many more games.
There's so many more games,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, depends on who's playing. Now, this first week, I mean, well, we won't have an NFL week to compare it to. But, I mean, I think the handle will be terrific. Now, you have to, yeah, there's always that 1 or 2 weeks during the college schedule where you look at, oh, man, there's hardly a game I even want to watch. Yeah, so those aren't very good.
Yeah.
But on a typical week, once we get September, October, even into the early part of November, you know, on a weekly basis, it's about equal. But then, you know, college football, you know, essentially ends right around Thanksgiving, whereas, you know, the NFL's really just getting rolling. So at that point in time, they just, you know, for the year-end numbers are just much greater in the NFL.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question? Personal question?
It depends.
Are you on board for guessing lines on Monday of the second week of the season and beyond?
I want to be, but there's a couple issues I think we have to clear up.
Okay. Issues to clear up.
Issues to clear up.
The people are clamoring.
Well, I know they are, and I don't. You know, first of all, I don't want to negotiate in public. I hate
tradition
when ball players
any
do
other
that. I don't like that. But I just want to say I've always been like an at will. You know, not an employee, but an at will 1099, whatever you want to call it. And they wanted me to sign a contract, and I told them that I can't sign that contract. You know, I just want to keep going the way it was. What's wrong with the way it was?
Nothing's wrong with the rest.
Okay.
All right. So I'll take that as a hopefully. I'll take that as a hopefully. Okay.
I want to keep doing it. I always tell you that's my favorite 2 hours of the week.
It is my favorite 2 hours of the week, and it has become such a integral part of our weekly routine.
Yeah.
That to not do it would be so foreign to me at this point, right? Because we've done it for a decade.
Yeah.
I want to say this would be our 10th year.
I think this is our 10th year.
Yeah. Because we looked back, we thought it was.
Yeah, we thought it was more, but
it was 10. This would be 10. So. I mean, still, that it's, listen, this is the thing about guessing lines. And it's interesting because for this audience, and for those who don't know, what Chrissy and I have done for, you know, this going into our 10th year, every Monday morning, so I don't, you know, when we first started this, it was easy to not see the lines.
Right.
It has become increasingly more difficult, but I'm putting together so many notes. Like, people don't believe me that I don't see the lines. I don't, because I'm doing the notes for the recaps on it, such that I don't know what they are. So I guess what they are. I just sort of represent to the person that, well, this is what the line should be, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Then you actually...
Hence the t-shirt, I like your number better.
I like your number better.
Yeah.
And then you actually tell us what you're going to post once the show ends here at 9 a.m. Pacific at the South Point. And it's funny because with our audience, you know, our audience is very close to the sun. So there's always going to be a portion of that audience is like, I already know what the line's, right? The reality is, and by the way, this is something that got highlighted at the Bet Bash conference about gambling Twitter too. And as much as I have reason not to be a fan of Darren Revelle's because he's plagiarized some of my tweets in the past, he took a lot of incoming and I have a lot of respect for him. And he said a few things that were very smart that didn't get highlighted. And this is about us being too close to the sun. One of the things he said is, actually, most people aren't that savvy about what's going on at every given moment, like our audience is. So for a broader audience, that is still there is no other place where an actual bookmaker gives us his thought process on what he does with an NFL line, the most heavily bet sport that there is by far, right the next morning before the Monday night game, heading into the next week. And so it's just a tremendous thing, and people adore you for doing it. Obviously, we used to do story time, the audio version of your book, if you will, Then One Day. By the way, you get that compliment from Jason Weingarten. He liked Then One Day better than the Billy Walters book.
He sent me that privately.
Yeah.
You know, I told him I'd much appreciate it. You know, I really, and I have a ton of respect for Jason. I think he's a really smart kid.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody that's watched this show can figure
it out. He likes Then One Day better than the Billy Walters book.
But let me go back to that. I mean, sometimes we see the number. Okay, that's the number. But I think a lot of guys, even like your pro guys, well, how and why did we get there?
Yes.
You know, so I mean that, and listen, you don't want to think exactly like the bookmaker. Otherwise, you'd look at the line and say, oh, that's a perfect number. I'm not going to make any bet. Well, who wants to do that? You know, but if you see how and why, you know, we as an industry have gotten there, and you disagree with that, you know, and that's why those numbers are there, and that's why we do so much action, because of course they don't agree with the bookmaker on every game.
Yeah.
You know, what's their 14, you know, 15 games, whatever it is on a weekend, you know, you're going to maybe have plays on 7 or 8 of them. You know, the pro guys I'm talking about, or even the guys that are doing it for fun.
Yeah.
You know, you disagree on what that number is and how and why it got there. But we go through that exact exercise.
And you do it so well. I don't think every bookmaker could do this, by the way, because you're more normal than some. Let me just point it out. Like, you're more human than some. No names or anything.
But you
do it in a way that's very engaging. And it's just a great way to kickstart the week of your NFL handicapping, because you don't have to agree with your number. You don't have to agree with my guess. You know, even some of the guesses where I'm like, oh, wow, you know, even though there's a 2-point difference, I don't want to race to the tick, you know, to the window to bet that. There's all kinds of thought process behind it, but it is a great window into recency, how recency bias can affect lines. By the way, on my end or on your end, right? Like, so it's a great just sort of reflection of the human condition in that regard also. So,
and by the way, we've given out a lot of winners on this show.
Oh, yeah. We always joke about how we give out, if we only bet, if that was the thing, if we had only gone with the picks on Monday morning instead of talking ourselves out of it as the week goes on, because you're inundated, right?
Yeah,
the rest of the week with everybody's opinions on, oh, I don't like this team, I like this team. That by the end of the week, you're like, oh, man.
I know I made it 7 and it only came out 4, but you know what? Maybe that 4 is the right number. You know, something
maybe
like that.
Person X is right about this.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So, I mean,
that felt like every other week last year. Last season.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were saying that. You were saying that by the end of the week.
A tradition unlike any other.
But I think
overall, what we do, though. We always talk ourselves out of it.
Yeah, but overall, I think if you followed like where, not just like what the number is, but where we think it's going.
Where you think it's going.
You know, so I think that could be, guys that are married to that closing line value, I think we've given them a lot of pointers on which way we think it's going to go.
Yeah, you do a great job of that as well. Chrissy Andrews, my mishpucha, live from the South Point Hotel Casino here on the tip of the strip. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming back.
The Sports Betting Network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com to check the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? Well, the betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 10 minutes. So you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits, yet another way that VSiN is here to make you smarter, better year-round. Check them out. All of today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. Ooh, we got a mess of tweets here. Where do I go back? I'll just do these in reverse because there's too many here. This is Bert Wiedemeyer. Chrissy Andrews, the greatest thing since sliced bread. Anyone who loves Young Frankenstein as much as I do is aces in my book.
Okay, I'll take that.
By the way, that's Frankenstein. Just want everybody to
know. Frankenstein.
Frankenstein. The Better Life, Tim Lawson. I hope all those issues get cleared up because I will not be it will not be NFL season without Guessing Lines. Bill Beard, are you telling me there's a remote possibility that Chrissy might not be on Guessing Lines? It's the best show that I listen to. Pay that man his money.
It's not money, by the way.
It's not money.
And I know people say it's not money, it's the money. It's not the money.
Mark Geiger, in-house attorney on Joe Pete. All praise to Joe. I've ordered my copy, so make sure he tokes you a bit. Seriously, this topic should be taught in statistics and business departments at every university. It's applicable to so much more than sports. Joe is a tremendous thought leader. Yeah, the book again, Moneyball for the Money Set. I read it on the trip to Korea, cover to cover. Fantastic about assessing portfolio managers. We always say that, like, this guy's record in handicapping is this. Weathermen, no one ever takes them to task, right? Portfolio managers, they're literally managing your money, and no one has ever done a true analysis of these folks. And Joe lays it out.
Oh, I can't wait to read that.
Really. Lays it out brilliantly. No, it's awesome.
I got to say, I you know, for a little while, and people, and it'll be in my new book that's coming out, that I was with some of these Wall Street guys, and they were very good portfolio managers.
Yeah.
They're very good. I left the company just, you know, but they're still doing it.
All right. So from the bets that you have taken in the National Football League, you say there are clearly two teams that people think, how can I put this? I'm looking for the right word. Suck.
Yeah.
Who are those teams?
No surprise on the first one, Arizona.
The tanking Arizona Cardinals.
They cut Colt McCoy.
How do you think? Did anybody interview Colt McCoy, by the way? Did anybody get a quote from him on this?
I haven't seen one.
Okay, Josh Dobbs is okay. I mean, he was with the Steelers.
Had two good games with the Titans last year.
No, he's okay. Yeah. I mean, he's, you know, and he's really smart. He's literally a rocket scientist, so you know he's going to pick up on the offense. He's not going to hurt you there. But that's all he is. He's just okay. Colt McCoy, I always thought was a very, very good backup. Hey, you're not going to win a Super Bowl probably with Colt McCoy as your starter, but I thought a very capable backup. And, you know, I've never been a fan of Kyler Murray, although one guy had tweeted me, said, you said this one time about Kyler Murray. I'm thinking, oh, my God. I thought it was only my wife that remembered every stupid thing I ever said in life.
Kelly, would you like to talk about Kawhi Leonard at this point? Tell him you're...
Not going to be as good as Chris Singleton.
Kelly, there's this guy on Twitter. What is it? Cold Takes? Cold Takes. He has Kelly's from years ago talking about how he goes, what was the phrase that you started? He goes, what was the first thing you said?
I'm sorry.
It's very Kelly. I'm sorry. But Chris Singleton's going to be better than Kawhi Leonard or something like that. I'm sorry.
It's like that's NBA draft stuff. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But anyway, I've never liked Kyler Murray, and I thought, you know, so it looks like Arizona, I don't think likes him that much either. It looks like they're playing for Caleb Williams. I don't think they had to try all that hard, to be honest.
So that was the point that a lot of people were making. Yeah. They're like, do you really have to do this to get Caleb Williams? Right. Like, you were going to stink anyway.
Yeah, and you're in a pretty tough conference.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I don't think they had to do that. I mean, division, I mean.
I know it's like different people in management with the Cardinals, but how about their recent quarterback history where they drafted Josh Rosen, quickly moved along from him to Kyler Murray, and now are not quite as quickly, but somewhat quickly
they
moving
still gave
along
him,
from him.
I don't know how much is guaranteed in all that. You know, these NFL quarterback contracts, but I think they guaranteed him quite a bit in the overall contracts, about $250 million, something like that.
I believe I heard $80 million would be on a dead cap hit.
Yeah, oof, that's a lot. I said it from the beginning. I never liked him. I thought he was just too little. He's too little.
Yeah. You
know? Anyway, Arizona, one team that looks like, and by the way, who's behind Josh Dobbs? They mentioned some name. I never heard of the guy.
That would be Clayton Toon.
Never heard of the guy.
Clayton Toon, Chrissy. Fourth round draft pick.
Yeah. Where was he from?
Clayton Toon. Where's Clayton Toon from again? I keep thinking Easton. I want to say Easton Stick every time, but it's not Easton Stick. It's Clayton Toon. I remember betting on Clayton Toon in college games,
Houston.
Too. Yeah. Clayton Toon was one of these Houston quarterbacks.
Houston.
A long line of Houston quarterbacks who have reached the NFL, by the way.
Yeah.
Success.
Yeah, very even moderate
the,
success.
Even the Andre Wares of the world and the Case Keenums of the world.
Yeah,
right?
Who I like both of those guys coming out. But anyway, the other team that I think people have isolated, by the way, another quarterback I wasn't crazy about. And that, well, because of the Carolina Panthers. You know, I liked C.J. Stroud better than Young. I thought that, you know, again, too small. You know, too small. And I know we're looking at mobile quarterbacks and this and that. And they talk about, you know, Mahomes and Jalen Hurts. They're very mobile quarterbacks, and they're also big guys. Like, Mahomes is a bigger guy than you think. He plays like a kind of a point guard, but, you know, he's a bigger guy, and Jalen Hurts is definitely a big guy.
So you see that in the betting that folks are convinced. So what are they betting primarily on? The
season win total
under.
Yeah, and I tried to shade it, but I could see right now. I mean, I'm flooded with it. You know, I tried to have numbers to reflect, to make it difficult for guys to bet on those games under, and they're not buying it.
I bet Carolina to be the last winless team at 15-1. You know what I consider this? This was the first NFL draft that I got beat on.
Yeah.
And the big thinking was, how could the team with a number one pick settle on Bryce Young, who was surrounded by great players at Alabama, like all Alabama quarterbacks are. You know, you can extend that to Ohio State and others as well. But I get it. He had a great college career. He's awesome. He's a great kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he's small. And by the way, if you see him in preseason, he looks, not Deuce McAllister. What's Deuce's last name again? But Deuce, who plays for the Cowboys, who's like five. I mean, he looks like he's a middle schooler. Right?
Yeah.
But Bryce Young looks painfully short behind the line of scrimmage.
I know. I agree.
And you just wonder, you're like, so this is like the extension. This is me, my draft 2.0 conviction.
Yeah, okay.
Like Carolina, last winless team. And if you look at their schedule, there is a path.
Yeah.
There is a path. Now, I hope, right, beyond my bet, I hope he ends up being great because he's a great kid by anybody's, you know, who's ever come in contact with him. I mean, you see him in interviews, you love him. But man, I doubt it.
Yeah, I'm in the same camp. You know, some of these guys are just too little. You know, and even now I'm going back to Flutie. I said when Flutie, you know, he was great in the USFL, great in college. He got to the NFL. He was terrible.
Drew Brees was 6 feet tall. I was saying this. When the camera was behind Drew Brees, when they used to show that angle, I always used to be like, how does he see, like, and he was 6 feet tall, and he ends up being a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
I think he is vastly underappreciated, and I know, like, he didn't turn out to be this, you know, greatest guy. You know, people didn't love some of his post-retirement comments or him as announcer, that kind of thing. But what he did on a football field was pretty amazing at that size. But when you drop down from that several inches, I just don't know.
Well, Drew Brees was also an aberration. We get some of those aberrations once in a while. So now you draft the quarterback and say, oh, he could play till he's 45 because Brady did it. Okay, there's another aberration. I don't think these guys are going to play till they're 45 years old.
Houston was not in that group. People don't have a consensus that Houston is going to be terrible.
Well, I think that was kind of in the number. And like I said from the beginning last year, I liked C.J. Stroud better. You know, he's a big dude, and I know you could say a lot of the same things about he was surrounded with a ton of talent. He had good coaching, a good organization, whatever, you know, but he's just bigger, you know, and I just think that means a lot in the NFL. You know, it still does.
Some things are just pretty simple, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, Young, and I've said this before on this show, I'm rooting for all these guys to do well because I want the league to thrive. Admittedly, I'm going to be rooting against half of them every week. That's just the way it goes.
Yep.
But I want the league to thrive. I want all these quarterbacks to be good. And right now, go back and look at the, you know, we can go back to 1970 when Bradshaw was selected number one overall. It's about a 50-50 shot on quarterbacks.
Of course.
And they do more scrutinizing on quarterbacks, certainly, than they do on guards and tackles and linebackers and everybody else. And it's no better than a 50-50 shot. And even the last couple drafts. Look at now. We were talking about Mariota and Winston. Which one of them was going to be better? Well, they're both clinging to a job right now.
Mariota and Winston.
Yeah.
There's so many of those in retrospect. Who was Manning and Leaf, of course?
That's a famous one, of course. Yeah.
One of those.
You go back to Achilles Smith and Joey Harrington, all kind of guys. Tim Couch, another number one draft choice.
Chrissy Andrews, everybody. My mishpucha. I won't do that show without you, by the way. I will not do that show without you. Lombardi Line is next. Enjoy from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.